for guessing. I wouldn't have guessed.
Pack said you were the smart one, Thistle says. Disappointing, Daxo. Disappointing.
Well, in comparison, he'd probably... Clown begins before Pebble smacks him upside the head. Ow! Don't talk shit about Pax, Pebble snaps.
Big man was a sweetie. Does no one care about the answer? Roke asks melodically. Fine, fine, I understand. You all think I'm a bore.
We're dying to know, Thistle snaps. Do tell.
Who was the world's first carpenter?
Roke asks again.
You don't have to start all over, Pebble moans.
Well, it works best that way.
Roke sighs.
Eve.
Eve?
Daxo asks.
Because, Roke leads, she made Adam's banana stand.
A collective moan.
That's just embarrassing, Pebble says with a sigh. Never thought I'd miss Tactus.
Then a high-pitched, whining laugh springs out of Daxo, just like Pax.
Eve! Eve, he said! Banana stand! Ah!
It's like the giants have little ridiculous elves inside them, just waiting to spring out and cackle. Just takes a lot of provocation.
I think he broke Daxo. Does anyone smell that? Clown asks.
I smell bacon,
Daxo tries. There's a crunch as he bites into a piece.
No, Clown says. Smells like a suicidal madman recently risen from the dead after conquering a planet and abandoning his friends to get himself cut to gory ribbons like a slagging fool.
Daxo sniffs.
That's a particular scent.
Oh, Darrow dear, Clown calls. Are you lurking behind the door?
Mustang pushes me out awkwardly.
You eavesdropping pixie.
Daxo glides to his feet and pulls me into a surprisingly gentle hug. The golden angels on his bald head glitter in the morning sun.
Glad to see you, my friend.
They all greet me in turn. More hugs than I've ever received from gulls. Roke hugs me mechanically. A perfunctory gesture. There is still mending to be done. I gorge myself on breakfast as my friends banter. We spend the day on the property, whiling away time in conversation and games. It's been so long since I've had either that I've nearly forgotten how to do nothing. Mustang has to kiss my ear and tell me to relax 3 times before it really sticks. We're in the library, listening to music, when she sees Roke out the window on the lawn. She nudges me.
Go.
I find Roke watching a pair of deer eat from a feeder underneath an old elm. He doesn't turn to look at me as I sidle up next to him. It smells like fresh-cut grass. The sea somewhere over the hill.
It makes sense this is where Mustang grew up, I say. It's wild and tranquil all at once.
My home was meant to be in the city, Roke says, though I snuck off to the country with my tutors whenever Mother was away. Which was often. She seemed to think there was nothing out here worthwhile, that the business of cities was more important than this. But this is why we fight, isn't it?
For land, I ask.
For peace, in whatever way we find it. He turns to me. Isn't that why you fight?
Some of us weren't born with peace, I say, gesturing to the deer and the land. I didn't have this growing up. Anything I have now, or will have in the future, I have to earn. But you're right. It's why I fight. So I can have this for me and the people I care for.
His eyes search my face.
Fair enough.
I want to apologize to you, Rogue.
Again?
Since the Academy, I've kept you at arm's length. I've taken you for granted. I shouldn't have done that. Not when you've always been so kind to me.
He doesn't meet my gaze.
I didn't mind that it was always about you, Darrow. That was what burned Tactus, but not me. I'm not in love with you like Mustang. I don't worship you like Severo or the Howlers. I was a true friend. I was someone who saw your light and your dark, and accepted both without judgment, without agenda. And what did you do to me? You used me, like a man uses a horse. I'm better than that. Quinn was better than that.
Are you better than this friendship? I ask quietly, afraid of the answer.
I think I'm better than you, he says.
I step back, wounded.
He watches a deer nibble at the grain in the feeder. I've sat by the bedsides of three friends this year. Quinn, Tactus, and you. Each time I knew I would have gladly switched places with any of you. Would you wish the same?
I'd give my life to bring them back, I say, knowing it is a lie. Much as I love these goals, I have greater responsibilities. Until this is over, it's not my life to give.
He turns from the deer to watch me, eyes warm and sad and carrying so much more weight than they ever should. He's different from me. From Cassius. We called him brother, and he was one better than either of us deserved. Have you ever wondered why they put me in House Mars? I'm not the typical draft. Most would probably put me in Apollo, or Juno.
Quinn always had that competition in her blood. But you...
Yes, I've wondered.
Darrow!
I turn to see Severo standing behind us in uniform.
It's urgent!
Not now, Severo.
Reap, I'm not shitting you,
he says. I look back to Roke.
Go, he says, and walks toward the deer, pulling berries from his pocket.
Roke!
I call to him plaintively.
Friendships take minutes to make. Moments to break, years to repair, he says, turning to glance over his shoulder. We'll talk again soon.
I watch him go, feeling a small bit of hope warm me. I turn to Severo and clap his back.
Good to see you. Sorry about... Piss off! I'm not a whining little bitch like a poet. It's Ares. Your friends. The red, the pink, and the violet have gotten themselves captured.
By whom?
Who do you think? The Jackal!
Chapter 45. Gifts. My ship lands in the early morning snowfall of Attica, a southern mountain city set on seven peaks. Jagged buildings of steel and glass christen the peaks like icy thorn crowns, now dusted with fresh powder. The red morning sun rises over the mountain range to the east. Bridges link the seven peaks, and the city's lesser wards spill around the roots of the mountains. My shuttle flies over them. Plows melt paths through the snow with pulsing orange blades. Soon mid-color land cars will flow along the avenues, and high-colour shuttles will ferry silvers and golds to their offices on the mountain peaks. Remote and renowned for its banking, Attica is a prime seat of power. It belongs now to the Jackal. Under heavy guard by ripwings, I land on a platform surrounded by evergreens. Several lurchers wait there in white tactical gear. A lone gold stands with them. Victra embraces me with a hug, a white fur pelt pulled tight about her shoulders. Jade earrings clatter in the breeze as the greys inspect the outside of my ship. "Victra," I say, holding her back to look at her. She grins devilishly and kisses my cheek, grabbing my butt as she does. I jump in surprise. She laughs merrily. "Just making sure the pieces are in order. You had us worried, darling. Roke kept me apprised while I was with Lorne." "Brokering another alliance, I hear." "Who would have thought? Victra Au Julii, the peacemaker." The greys notify me that they have orders to search my ship. "Ragnar," I call. He steps out of the ship's confines, near twice the size of the largest grey. "Let the mice search the ship. They're looking for..." The grey spares a glance at Ragnar, swallows. "Bombs, Dominus." Victra escorts me into the Jackal's new home, a fortress citadel atop the highest of Attica's peaks. The city stretches far beneath us. Trees line the path from the landing pad to the citadel. Adrius took the place soon as the last Bellona ship retreated, came in with 1,000 lurchers and displaced the Bellona allies who owned the place, took all they had, emptied their bank accounts, full-on theft. But that's war. She nods to the west. "Wonderful slopes just a few clicks out. We'll take a few days when this all settles down. You bring Virginia. I'll find myself a man." Nearly my own height, she looks sideways at me. "You do ski, don't you?" I snort out a laugh. "Never had the time." We find the Jackal in his living room. Walls and floor are glass. Fire swirls under the floor, licking up in columns near the window. Several minimalist chairs of steel and leather sit on fur rugs. The Jackal is hunched over a holo display, speaking quickly to someone. He motions us to take a seat. On the holo, I glimpse harmony in a dark room, surrounded by greys. One is hunched over her, doing something with some device I can't quite see. We sit by the flames, but a chill goes through me that no fire can dispel. The Jackal finishes, giving a data strip to Sun Hua before she leaves. He joins us, rubbing the back of his neck. "So many moving parts." He winces. "Hell, organizing the food shipments alone takes 100 coppers. And those odious little shits will spend all day bickering about whether or not a ship should have granola or muesli in its galley. Both is an option." "Both? How difficult is that, really? It's like they enjoy the spreadsheets and busy work. Mind-boggling." "I keep telling him he should delegate more efficiently," Victor says. "So they've been talking too. I'm behind." "I hate delegating," the Jackal replies. He scratches his head. "At least with numbers and particulars. You two can take all the gory planets you like. Just leave me my bureaucracy, please."
"Kind of you," I laugh. "Just keep me away from food requisition orders."
I lean forward. "I hear the fleet will be ready to depart for the core in 2 weeks. By the by, wonderful new home you have."
"I like it,"
he sighs. "Father is furious I took it for myself, of course. He wanted to give it as a present to one of the governors of the gas giants. I think you've earned it, I say. That and more.
Exactly.
The jackal makes a tired motion with his lone hand. I came here as a boy to ski with mother. I always looked up here and said it'd be mine. Father said you can't have everything you want.
And you asked, why not?
Victra says. She's already heard the story.
Why not?
The jackal repeats the words fondly. So if father wants it back, he'll have to make his own food purchase orders. We all know it isn't food purchase orders that occupy his time. Not solely. I accept a cup of tea from a pink. A small spread of breakfast is placed in front of me. I'm 7 hours behind this time zone, but I can't let on how nervous I am. The jackal watches me spear a melon with my fork. Who knows what he thinks behind those dirty gold eyes?
So, Darrow, healed and mended in time for the great battle.
Mending, I say. No thanks to your media. The HC shows all say I've become immortal since Carnus opened me up.
It's all part of the game, my goodman. Perception, deception, media.
He slaps his hand on his thigh, though his eyes don't share the mirth.
Give me the word, and I can go public with your improved vitality. We'll schedule a press conference. Dress you in armor. My violets are building you a proper suit of your own. They've been conspiring with greens to give you a marvel of form and tech.
You know I hate the cameras.
Oh, stop whining. They're why we have half our allies, and why the Sovereign's scrambling like a spider on ice. Her coalition is... stressed.
We'll do it today, then, I say. I look out the window, remembering Rogue's words. I wanted a moment of peace, but... They join me in looking at the falling snow and the distant city beneath. I suppose we've yet to earn that. Which brings me to why I called this meeting.
I admit, I've been curious, the jackal says.
He's been dying to know,
Victra corrects. I nod to Ragnar, who followed Victra and me into the room. He comes forward with two boxes from my ship.
I wanted to give you both gifts. Our alliance has had an... interesting beginning, but I want you both to know how committed I am not only to it, but to each of you. I hope you take this to be a sign of my trust.
Always trust a stained bearing gifts,
Victra chuckles, looking up at Ragnar.
Gory hell, go over there. You're like a tree blocking out the light, Ragnar.
Ragnar, wait outside, I say. The jackal doesn't even look at Ragnar. Physical power bores him. Snapping her fingers, so I bring my attention back to her, Victra unwraps her box to find a small crystal bottle I had Theodora commission from the carvers on the Pax before the Siege of Mars.
Petrichor, I say, as she opens the bottle.
The room fills with the smell of stone before rain. She thanks me with a scarred hand on my forearm, holding the bottle close to her chest.
No one remembers that sort of thing. Thank you, Darrow.
She sits there for a moment before rising quickly and kissing me on the lips. I would have preferred the cheek.
My turn.
The jackal unwraps his box with his lone hand, tearing through the paper with a grin on his face. He opens the leather box beneath and is quiet for a long moment.
Darrow, you shouldn't...
He's cut short as a high-pitched alarm screams out of the walls. A grey lurcher bursts into the room, weapon drawn. Four others accompany her.
Dominus, we have a breach in the lower level.
We have to escort you to a safer room.
Who?
The jackal rasps. Victor and I draw our razors. The grey is about to answer when the alarms are cut short and replaced by a rising, humorless laughter over the speakers. It echoes through the room, even as the lighting of the place blacks out. We hurry to the door. A small metal spider clinks onto the window. The glass melts. My vision and hearing vanish, replaced by a swarming, high-pitched keening. I stumble, stunned by the flash grenade. Dark shapes fly into the room. Blinking, I glimpse cacodemon masks, eyes glowing red out of terrible visages. The sons have come. They shoot the greys and kick us to the ground. Ragnar storms in from the hall and catches three stun-fist blasts to his chest. He goes down like a felled tree. One masked intruder bends over the jackal. As my hearing returns, I make out that he's screaming for the code to the facility's mainframe. He shoves the muzzle of his scorcher into the jackal's mouth till the jackal gives it up. "Some gold," rasps a distorted voice. Behind the mask, I know Severo would love nothing more than to pull the trigger, and for a moment I think he's going to. But he waits for me as he's supposed to, and on cue, I rise sluggishly, shaking off the results of the flash grenade, and grab one of the intruder's weapons, taking it for myself. I fire at them. They fire at me, each of us missing on purpose. Then they are gone, back out the window. The greys lie dead on the ground. Victra bleeds from a shallow head wound and rises to her feet. The jackal tries to stand, blood dripping from his nose. Wordlessly, we try the doors to the room. They're locked. The sons have control of the mainframe now. The jackal leans his head against the door. Then he rears back and slams it into the metal again, 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 till blood pours down his face. I have to pull him away before he splits his skull. He laughs darkly for a moment, before shaking himself. "Twice," he sneers. "Twice they violate me." An animalistic shudder goes through his body. "I was breaking them. Another day, maybe two, and they would have cracked." "Who?" Victor asks. He doesn't answer. I press the question. "Who, Adrius? Who the hell was that?" "Terrorists came for captured sons," he says impatiently. "One was the pink bitch who tried to kill us on Luna, Darrow. It wasn't Pliny, after all, it was the sons. Another was one of Ares's right hands. They call her Harmony. A violet was with them, making them an army of carved soldiers." "You had captured sons of Ares here? When were you going to tell us this?" Victor snarls, standing from checking for the pulse of a dead grey. "I wasn't. Not until I knew who Ares was." "What else are you keeping from us?" I say. "This is a partnership." I kick over a table. "Why the gory hell do you have me, if not to protect you from things like this?"
"My fault," he says. "My fault."
He swallows the blood in his mouth and walks toward the empty window bank, gripping my shoulder as he passes. Wind howls in. "You did protect me. Yet again. Thank you." I scowl and brood in fine, actorly fashion. "They couldn't have been Reds," I say bitterly. "Couldn't have been sons. Sons never would have, could have, done that. Not to me. Not to Ragnar." I help the stained from the floor. "They were too organized. They had grav boots."
"You underestimate them, my friend," the jackal says. "They can pull triggers, too. And they would have pulled them with their muzzles against our heads if you hadn't stopped them."
"How the gory damn did they get past your security?" Victor asks.
Weather tracking devices, signal jammers, grav boot signatures.
I don't know, the jackal says. Because the sun's held on to my hull, wearing ghost cloaks, like little barnacles.
Who else has come and gone? I ask.
He looks around, as I hoped he might. He calls up his men on a comm at his desk. After a moment, he looks back up to us.
Sun Hua, he whispers. Her men are dead, and she's gone like the wind. She survived the last attack, too.
Then he laughs. She betrayed me!
And when he sees the money transferred to Sun Hua's accounts, he'll find all the corroborating evidence he needs to pin the blame on his chief of security. Only thing is, Sun Hua is loyal as a dog and dead as a doornail in the cargo hold of the shuttle that now tears away from the jackal's winter citadel, carrying Fitchner, Severo, and my once-captured friends.
I come beside the jackal as Victor tries the door again. Together we watch the ship disappear beyond the mountains, and I say in a low, menacing voice,
"We will kill the rats. Together. I promise. All of them."
"After the Sovereign," he says, patting my back. "After the Sovereign."
Chapter 46 Brotherhood. I hug Dancer so hard his back cracks. He taps me in panic. I apologize and separate, feeling large as a Telemannus next to him. Outside the garage-turned makeshift office, the Sons of Ares warehouse rattles with industry. They brought me in through the side door and had me wait for Dancer among old engines and rusted airlons. Dancer pulls back from me and looks up, rusty eyes glittering with tears. Starting to think that I once considered him a handsome man. He's in his 40s, old for a red, hair shot with grey, face creased by age and hardship. His right arm still hangs limp, his foot still drags, and his smile still stretches wide enough, bearing uneven, imperfect teeth.
"My boy," he says, gripping my shoulder with his left hand. It's stronger than all the rest of him put together.
He smells like tobacco. Nails are yellow.
"My bloody damn beautiful little bastard of a boy. You look so bloody grand."
He laughs and laughs again, shaking his head.
"There are no words. I'm sorry I couldn't reach you. Sorry I let Harmony use you like that. There are so many things, Darrow."
"Stop." I clap the back of his neck. "We're brothers. No need for apologies. We're bound by blood and past. But please, please don't let it happen again." He nods. "How's my family? Do you know?"
"Alive," he says. "Still in the mines."
"I know, I know. But that's the safest place for them with this war abound. No one wants to blow up Mars's industry. Register." He waves me to a seat. "Don't know many gulls, but that Severo's a nasty little shit. When I delivered his father's instructions to him out on the rim, I thought he was going to cut me from gob to pucker."
He lights a burner, winks at me. "Never met anyone like him."
"He's loyal as they come," I say.
"Like you."
"No, I mean, he can swear better than any bloody damn red."
"Severo swears."
I smile. "Guess you get used to it. Though he does like saying bloody a hell of a lot now."
"It's a fine word. Rolls off the tongue. Done some research."
He puffs up his chest. "Been with us since the first ancestors, you know. The first gulls, the ones with normal eyes and gold uniforms, took most of the early recruits from the poor bastards from the Irish Isles after the radiation from London turned the Isles into a wasteland. The Gauls took the highly skilled migratory workforce and recruited them to be the first pioneers. Their slang just stuck around, jumbled up a bit. History's fascinating, isn't she?
Harmony's been making up her own history, I say.
That's right. I'm dead.
He shakes his head and lights another burner, flicking the other onto the floor. I pick it up and put it in the wastebasket.
She went her own way about a year after you left. We discovered several senators were going to be vacationing on the Gorgon Sea, so we showed up to bug their villa to see if we couldn't get any secrets. We didn't, just lots of depraved shit. And that was that, we thought. But not for Harmony. On the last night she walked in and killed the senators and their guests. Then she left us.
So there was never a Lurcher squad that raided your headquarters?
He shakes his head. They came because of her. Killed about 40 sons. But she'd already left for Luna. Ares saved us. Came in hard with a mixed pack of obsidians and greys. Laid waste to those lurchers, then slipped away before reinforcements came. It's lucky he killed them at all. No way they wouldn't know he was a Gold after that. Had our first face-to-face that day. Man's bloody damn scary.
Not the word I'd choose. Though maybe it's accurate, considering how well he fooled me.
It doesn't bother you that he's a Gold?
It doesn't bother him that we're Reds. Ares would die for the cause, Darrow.
Shit, he started it. You know why he did.
I shake my head.
It's his story.
Dancer traces the pit viper bites on his neck. A man has the right to tell his own story, but his isn't a happy one.
Sad as yours.
Sad as mine.
Strip a man of what he loves, and what's left?
Just hate. Just anger. But he was the first to know there could be something more.
He found me.
He found you. Who the bloody damn are we to question him? The door opens suddenly. We both turn and Mickey limps in. He looks half dead, thin as a reed, paler than before. Without a word he hobbles over to me and kisses me full on the mouth, his affection desperate and true. Then he starts weeping like a child. Dancer and I don't know what to do, so I just wrap my arms around him and let him cry. He whispers, "Thank you," to me a dozen times. What did they do to him? Never mind. I know the things the Greys are trained in to get information. He says he told them nothing. Still, I have to discover what the Jackal learned from this, what deductions he's made from finding Mickey's lab. I look over Mickey's head to see Fitchner standing there, smiling sadly. After a long moment, Mickey pulls back.
"I tried to warn you when you came to us on Luna,"
he says apologetically.
"Wanted to say to run, but she would have killed me if I said any more. I was afraid you would believe her over me."
"I would have believed you, Mickey."
"You would have?"
He sniffles.
"I knew you'd come for me. I said my darling boy was too kind to forget about Mickey. But she spat on me. Said I was a slaver."
He hangs his head, sniffing and so vulnerable. Drained and nearly mad from what must have been done to him in the Jackal's torture chambers.
"She was right. I am. I am wicked. I hurt the girls and boys. I sold them even when I loved them. Of course she was right. Why would you come? Why would you do anything for wicked little Mickey?"
"Because you're my friend." I bring his hands to my lips, kissing them gently as he looks up at me with hopeful eyes.
Weird as you are, wicked as you were, I know you want to be better. You want to live for more. We all do. And there's not a place they could take one of my friends that I would ever abandon them. It feels good to speak the truth.
Thank you, my prince,
he says quietly. He draws himself up after that, strong enough to turn and walk out of the office. Fitchner closes the door.
Well, that was emotional.
I nod. This is the man I'd rather be. Not constantly on guard. Not lying through my teeth. I suppose I didn't even know how much affection I felt for Mickey till now. It's not because he helped make me. It's that he's always loved me so much. Even if it was a strange sort of love, it was real. And I do believe he wants to be a man he thinks I would respect. Just like I want to be a man Io and Mustang would respect. And that's the good sort of love.
We need to talk, Fitchner, I say. We didn't have a chance earlier. Severo came to me with Dancer's plan. Call a meeting, attach the sons to my ship, let them infiltrate the building. All I did was suggest Sun Hua as the scapegoat, and let them know Victor was not to be harmed.
I leave you two to it,
Dancer says, pushing back his metal chair. No, I want you to stay, I say. I've too many secrets from too many people. I won't have any more between the three of us.
Lancer, Count Shithead,
Severo says, coming around a rusted engine block. The cheap metal door to the outside slams behind him. Smells like autumn, even in Aegea's oil-stained manufacturing district. He hops onto the rusted chassis of an old fighter and sits with his legs dangling.
Hey, look! It's all pricks for once. Let's tell sexist jokes.
Chuckling, I turn to Fitchner. So, you're Ares.
Man comes out of a coma and he's a genius, Fitchner barks.
He claps his hands, but his eyes stay deadly serious.
Most call me Bronzy. Students call me Proctor. Some call me Rage Knight. The Sovereign calls me Traitor. My son calls me Shithead.
You are a shithead, Severo chimes in.
My wife called me Fitchner, but the golds made me Ares.
Before now, I would not know what that meant. He is gold. How could the golds do anything to him? But now I've peeked behind the curtain. Why didn't you tell me who you were from the start?
And put my life in the hands of a teenager's acting ability, he cackles. I think not. If you were found out and they tortured you, bad news. I had alternate plans. Other irons in the fire. You just happen to be my favorite, but we mustn't be biased.
Who is your wife? I ask, already suspecting the answer.
Full or short story? He asks.
Full.
I was liaising for a terraforming company on Triton,
he begins gruffly.
I didn't have a glamorous job, like you. No razors, no armor, just construction management. Contract was leased by a silver. I was running one of the last Lovelock engines on their North Pole when an eruption from one of that moon's damn geysers caused an earthquake. Cracked the ice crust. Spilled the whole engine into the subterranean sea. 3,000 souls drowned. They fished me out of the sea, and I spent the next months recovering in the Arctic hospital. I was in the high-colour wing. We had the good food, better showers, newer beds, but the low colours had the window that looked at the northern lights. And she had the bed beside that window.
He looks up at Several.
She was the most beautiful woman I've ever met. And she was pretty to look at, too. She lost a leg in the accident, and they weren't going to give her a new one. They could. It's simple bionics. Not cost-effective, said the coppers. Shittiest colour ever made, I swear on. Severo clears his throat. We know. Fitzner throws a piece of trash at Severo and continues. When I left, I took her with me. I'd saved up money enough to leave Triton. Couldn't live in the core, too expensive. So I chose Mars. We lived just outside New Thebes for a year. We wanted a child more than anything, but our DNA wasn't compatible. So we went to a carver to see if we couldn't make some magic. We did. Cost me almost everything I owned. But 9 months later, this little goblin squirmed out. Several waves from his perch as he examines the trash to see if it isn't edible. 2 years later, the Board of Quality Control busted the carver for some work he did on some obsidian gladiator, and he ratted us out, fast-like, for a reduced sentence. They came to our home when I was away with Severo. Found my wife, took her in for questioning. Their doctors saw her fallopian tubes had been modified so that she would be compatible to sire a gold child. Then they disposed of her. Says so, right in the records. Disposed. Gassed her with Arklis 9, put her in an oven, pumped her ash into the sea. They didn't even give her a name, just a number. Not because she was a thief, or a murderer, or had violated any man's or woman's rights, but because she was a Red who dared love a gold. My selfish love killed her. It wasn't like your wife, Darrow. I didn't watch mine die. I didn't see gold come into my world and ruin it. Instead, I felt the coldness of the system swallow the only thing I've lived for. A copper pressing buttons, filling out a spreadsheet. A brown twisting a knob to release gas. They killed my wife. But they won't ever think so. She's not a memory in their mind. She's a statistic. It's as if she never existed. Some ghost I loved but no one else ever saw. That's what society does. Spread the blame so there's no villain. So it's futile to even begin to find a villain. To find justice. It's just machinery. Processes. And it rumbles on. Inexorable till a whole generation rises that will throw themselves on the gears.
What was her name?
Her name?
Why does it matter? He asks warily. Because I want to remember her.
Bryn, Severo says from above. My mother's name was Bryn. She was 22 when they killed her.
Only a year older than I am now.
Bryn. I repeat the word and see Fitzner rock slightly on his feet, a shortness of breath.
So, you're half Red, I say to Severo.
Severo nods.
Found out a couple of days ago. Weird as shit, righto?
Weird as shit.
You'll make a good ruster.
I like to think I'm an endangered species.
Dancer rolls a match through his fingers.
We all are.
You knew about Titus, I say to Fitzner.
But Dancer didn't. Don't blame him for that. I thought you'd be brothers at the Institute. A natural affection for your own race. But he went dark, and there was no way to reel him in. I met with him. Jammer, ghost cloak, like I met with you. But his mind broke under the strain. I didn't want to see you break.
I did break.
I look over at Severo, Dancer,
I just had friends to piece me back together. Why didn't you tell Titus and me about each other?
Then his mistakes would have been yours, and yours would have been his. In a storm, you don't tie two boats together. They'll drag each other down.
He clears his throat.
I always knew a gold couldn't lead this rebellion. It has to be from the bottom up, boyo. Red is about family, more than any other color. It's about love, amid all the horror of our world. If red rises, they have a chance to bind the worlds together. Mid-colors won't. Pinks, browns can't. Obsidians have failed before. And if they succeeded alone, they'd break the worlds instead of freeing them.
So what's the plan? I ask. I squabbed up your position next to the Sovereign.
You're hard to manipulate, Darrow, so I'll just cut to it. Augustus is going to adopt you.
You're not surprised.
It would make sense. He wants to tie my fate to his family. Probably make me marry Mustang. It'll fracture my alliance with the Jackal if I become an heir, though.
Does the Jackal care about that?
Severo asks. Seems like he's abandoned hope of ever gaining approval. Bloody bastard's building his own empire.
I'll have to see, I say. Fitzner continues.
Dispose of the Jackal, or make him part of the plan, it doesn't matter. Augustus will adopt you as his heir, and he will use you as a praetor in his armada. If you defeat the Sovereign, he won't settle for being King of Mars. He'll want to be Sovereign himself.
Help him be.
And a year into his reign, Severo will kill him and pin it on a rival. Maybe the Jackal.
My turn to rock on my feet. You want me to inherit the Empire, I guess. The entire society. I gawk at him. At Dancer. How can they look so serious?
Yes, Fitzner says. After he dies, all will look to the strongest. Be the strongest. Win the game of succession, and you can be Sovereign just as you were Primus. Just as you are Praetor. It's all games. Except this time, we're helping you cheat. We will feed you information, guard you against assassination attempts. With me on your side, you'll have a spy network even the Jackal and Sovereign cannot rival. We will bribe who we need to bribe, and kill who we need to kill.
I sit reflectively, looking at my hands. I thought the lies were nearly over. I want to declare what I am. I want to declare war.
We can't yet. You know that.
I do, but I don't want to leave these people. I won't be in the dark again. We will communicate, we will plan. No more grey areas, do you understand? I can't be alone like before.
Say yes, Fitzner, Severo says, or I'm not going either.
We'll communicate every day if you need. I can't come with you. There's a ghost war being fought that I have to manage. But in my stead, I'll send some of my best agents. You'll have a cabal you can trust. Spies, assassins, courtesans, hackers, all with perfect covers. All willing to die to break the chains. You are no longer alone. Relief fills me. But there's something I know I can't do. I have to go back.
Yes, they'll be wondering where you are, Fitzner agrees.
No, I say. I have to go home.
Home? Dancer asks. To Lycos?
Why? Fitzner asks. What's left for you there?
My family.
It's been 4 years. I need to see them before this begins. I look each man in the eyes, each so scarred and so wounded in his own way. You have to understand that. Things are about to break apart in ways we can't predict. We pretend we know what we're doing, pushing these goals to war, planning our own, like we can control it. But we can't. We're just mortals opening Pandora's box. And before everything turns upside down, I need to remember what I'm fighting for. I need to know it's worth it.
You want their blessing?
Dancer says.
Her blessing.
He knows my heart better than Fitchner. If I'm to let Augustus adopt me, then I must go home first.
You can't tell them what you are. They won't understand.
Fitchner steps forward, suddenly cautious of my temper.
You know that.
How much easier would this have all been if you and I had conspired the whole way through? I say. Lies breed lies. We have to trust. I look at several. I'm taking her to Lycos.
Her?
Dancer asks.
Mustang,
Severo murmurs.
No!
Fitchner almost yells.
Absolutely not. No, it's not worth the risk. You're set up now. She's in love with you. Don't lose that leverage because of a guilty conscience.
And what if I love her too?
Shit!
Fitchner curses.
Shit! 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 You're serious? I thought this was part of your gory damn game. Shit, boyo, you'll ruin everything. Gory damn idiot. Shit.
This is everything, I say. She loves me. I won't use her anymore. I won't leverage her. If I can't trust her, gold can't change, and Titus and Harmony were right. Hell, the society is right. You and I know that it's not about our color, it's about our hearts. Now let's put that to the test. And if you're wrong, if she rejects you for them...
I don't have an answer.
Severo hops down from his perch. Then I put a bullet in her head. Chapter 47. Free. The pot is a piece of shit. 300-meter-deep nest of metal and concrete, humid with the stink of swill and cleaning agent. Once it seemed to tower above Lycos's common, like some lofty castle. But as my ship descends, it's just a dull metal blister in the southern Martian taiga, far removed from the grand cities where men marshal for the great effort against Octavia Auloon. The greys inside aren't fit to get paid doing anything but intimidate reds. To think I once considered the greys, like Ugly Dan, crack troops. Sad to see how weak and petty the demons of my youth really were. As though I come from some hollow fantasy past. They did not know my ship was coming. They don't know why I'm here. Nor must I tell them. They just scatter like horseflies, as I stalk down my ship's ramp onto the engine-blackened landing pad. Obsidian bodyguards flowing out before me, Ragnar towering behind as I stalk through the metal-grated halls. Any of these greys will know how to get where I need to go, but I'm looking for a familiar face.
Dan, I ask one of the brown janitors. Where is he?
I burst into one of their common rooms, where a dozen greys play cards and smoke cigars. A woman notices me, turning her attention from an HC where several talking heads, a silver, a violet, and two greens, debate the political ramifications of Mars's conquest over a montage of my exploits. Her cigar falls out of her mouth. The man sitting at her side slaps the cigar as it falls on his pant leg and catches the fabric.
Collie, you dumb meat sheath.
He flings himself back from the table.
God damn, the hell is your...
Ugly Dan swivels to see me for the first time in 4 years. I can feel the hairs on his skin rise as the spring of discipline hidden in his slothful body snaps to attention. There's no recognition in his eyes, no fear, just obedience. This gives me no catharsis. Dan should have an impudent sneer on his lips, a nasty hyena cast to his aspect. But he doesn't. He's tame, obedient, face pocked from childhood acne. The greasy hair Lauren and I teased him from behind his back, now gone. A crater of baldness has replaced it, fringed with shoots of withered grey. He's as scary as a wet dog. This is the man I let kill Io. How could I not have stopped him? Was I ever so weak? The Bubble Garden, I say to Dan, voice filling the metal common room. Take me there. I've already turned on a heel. Ragnar pats his thigh. Come, dog. It's been 4 years since I last stood here. Stars twinkle in the grey above, as night pulls on its hood. The garden is smaller than I remember, less filled with colour, with sounds. I suppose that's to be expected, being where I've been, seeing what I've seen. There's more trash, more signs of greys using the place for screwing and drinking. I tow an empty beer can with my shoe. A candy bar wrapper marks the place where Io and I last lay together. I remember it, a bed of soft grass. But there are weeds now. Maybe there were weeds then, and I just didn't notice them. The flowers are wilted, paltry things. I touch one with my finger and feel a sadness pull at me as I peer up through the bubble roof to see stars shooting across the sky. I snort. Once they might have been stars. I thought them such when I was younger. But now I know they are warships that prepare for an assault on Luna. I don't know what I expected. No magic remains here. Should have left this place perfect in memory. I wonder if Io is safer there, safe from my eyes. If I saw her now, if I came back, would I be so in love? Would she seem so perfect? I walk through the garden. It really is barely larger than my suites on the packs. I'm thicker than the trees I walk under. The grass balls near the base of them, where the roots rear through the ground. I find the place I came for. Hemanthus flowers live atop Io's grave, dozens. It would seem a miracle if I did not remember the flower bud I set in the grave with her. She's not there any longer, I know that. The greys would have dug her up and strung her from the common to rot after they hanged me. There's a dark irony I'm only just realizing. I came here to ask for her blessing, but she's not here. She's fled this cage for the veil. So I sit cross-legged, waiting for the sun to set, where once I waited for it to rise. When it does, the day's waning light fills the bubble garden with a bloody hue, and then the sun surrenders to the horizon, and night draws its star-pierced shroud over Mars. I laugh at myself. Ragnar slips from his place at the door. I'm fine, I say, without turning to him.
She'd laugh at me for coming here.
Laughter is a gift.
Sometimes.